Welcome to Nostradamus. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
We discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, DVDs, TV, stuff like that. And I was just asking you if you had things to talk about. You had a few. I don't have a lot, so I think it's going to be one of those wing it or discuss old things shows.
There you go. So what is on your list?
I actually don't even have anything on my list. Well, I have seen no new movies.
I actually have a little bit of money for once, and I, of course, blew it on DVDs. So I've seen some DVDs, which is kind of cool for once.
That means I should. We should do one of these shows soon with my going over to your house so I can borrow some more.
I'm up to almost 1,100 now. I bought... the hell did I buy? I got this really cool documentary called... what is the name of it? It's called... I'm Not... You'll Miss Me. Or something. It's called You'll Miss Me. And it's about this guy who was the lead singer of this influential Texas psychedelic band from the late 60s called the 13th Floor Elevators. And he basically was schizophrenic. So it details his sort of descent into madness and his family sort of quasi-enabling it and one brother's effort to kind of pull him out of it. And it was honestly a really quite fascinating documentary. It was one of those documentaries where they just sort of portray it like it is, because at the end, without really commenting on it, because this brother basically gets custody of his schizophrenic brother and takes him over to his home in Oklahoma City and has this therapist work with him, and clearly on one level it helped, but on another level he seems just as crazy at the end of this movie as he was at the beginning, just a little less dirty and convoluted, and they don't really comment on that, which is good, because some movies they figure, oh, we've got to have a happy or a sad ending, and here it's just sort of an ending. But it was good. I love documentaries like that are sort of unresolved. And then I managed to frickin' buy the full screen edition of the Bourne Ultimatum.
Oh,
I hate that when I get home. I just didn't even. It's been so long since I've had money that I just like I couldn't control myself. I'm in the store and I'm just grabbing DVDs, and I didn't even look.
Not only that, but it gets to a point where you just assume.
Yeah.
That it's widescreen. You just no one's possibly putting out a full screen version. That's just ridiculous.
Exactly. And in this day and age, when pretty much every new TV sold has the widescreen format built in, it's not a full frame TV. It's just weird and rare. And I thought about bringing it back there as I just don't care. So I watched it just for the commentary, and it was cool. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, normally I pick up your unwanted DVDs, but I don't want that one.
Yeah, I was, I'm hanging on to it, but I do have like three here for you. One of my, not unwanted, just ones that I accidentally got like a third copy of, accidentally. They had a lot of really cool extras in this Bourne Ultimatum thing, and they did go into great detail about that jump in Tangiers, where the camera follows the guy through the window.
I actually have that DVD, the widescreen edition. I just haven't watched any of the extra stuff yet.
Yeah. Well, there's some good stuff in there. And then in that particular one, you end up seeing that, well, first of all, he doesn't exactly follow him all the way through the window because he stops just short of it, but enough that it was cool. And basically the cameraman is a stuntman who's on a rope, basically holding them in place. Still extremely cool and excellent, you know, short-lived but excellent extras about a lot of the stuff. So I enjoyed that. I love Paul Greengrass, so I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Well, and I just read a blurb a couple weeks ago about the possibility of a fourth movie. I mean, which, you know, they're always talking about what's possibly next, but they said I think they were talking to Matt Damon, and he's saying, you know, people are talking, and if we can come up with something that makes sense and that works and that everyone is excited about, you know, we're willing to do it. We're approaching it from the position of we don't need to. None of us needs to prove anything, and if it's not going to be worth it, there's no point in milking it and, you know, ruining you know, just we don't need to do it.
Well, that's what they always say. But I haven't heard anybody doing any actual writing. But it would be hard to imagine a movie that each one has made successfully more money, and the last one's probably made $500 million. Hard to imagine somebody somewhere not trying to come up with some idea. But that said, you know, if they really are, you know, it took them 20 years to make a fourth Raiders movie, and a lot of it was they literally were trying to get the right idea, because they put a lot of energy into scripts and abandoned them. So the people involved, for whatever reason, I highly doubt Paul Greengrass would direct it, but sure would be great. I mean, he's gotten to the point where there's nobody better at doing this kind of thing than him at all.
Well, you know. And it's, you know, if it was anyone else making those comments, you'd kind of take them with a gigantic grain of salt. But, you know, these people, I trust Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon to, you know, if that's what they say, then I trust them. And, you know, I think if there was no chance at all, they'd say there's no chance. They're saying, well, there's, you know, it's probably not going to happen. But if we come up with something that makes sense of the character as he gets older, or, you know, in an intelligent way extends the arc, then sure. But, you know, if it's just to make money, we don't need to do that.
Ruby. There's...
Lord. Are you safe?
Yes. There's a particularly ugly Bichon Frise walking by, and Ruby's quite disturbed by the fact. So, I have her firmly in my grasp now, so she's not going anywhere.
Anyway, so what other DVDs did you pick up?
God dang, what did I pick up? Once, haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen it either.
I got the DVD for, actually, our mutual friend Fred won it in a radio station contest, so I picked up Transformers. God. He just called up KGR Radio, and he won that, and a copy of Halo 3. He goes, do you have a PlayStation? I go, no.
Oh, God.
He goes, damn, because I got this Halo 3. And I go, well, first off, that's not a PlayStation game. And second of all, I definitely appreciate it. I'll take it to our auction. But there's like 14 million Xbox 360s out there, and like 13.5 million copies of Halo 3 out there.
That's
so
right.
So it's really hard to find somebody who actually doesn't have it, but I'll take it. So I got that, and I got a couple others. I can't remember what. Anyway, a couple other movies I enjoyed. And, God, I'm just trying to think of what it was. Yeah, I enjoyed Transformers actually a lot. I thought it was... For what it was great.
I thought it started out in a pretty interesting way in terms of, you know, blending and selling the realism of these robots.
Yeah.
And I think where it started to fall apart was the introduction of the John Turturro character and the whole Sector 7 thing. I thought that was, that's where I checked out and said, all right, fuck it. This, whoops. We'll have to edit that out.
That was a weird thing, but honestly, the whole movie is so dumb and convoluted that I simply could care less about that part.
I was accepting it in terms of him trying to present, okay, these are robots walking around in the world, and how are we playing? Are we playing it campy? You're playing it straight, you know, they're playing it dead on. They tried to play it dead on, but then they bring the Sector 7 stuff in, and that helped me check out. And it just, once that started, it got progressively more and more silly. I mean, and obviously, it's robots that turn into cars. Sure. The whole thing is silly.
I hear what you're saying, but for me, it was like silly from second one. Silly masquerading as not silly, but it was just plain silly. So I just totally went along with it. That's me.
And
I thought the effects were outstanding. I think some commentators had the exact opposite reaction to me, but the simple fact is how, for me, they created, you know, they're basically at a whole cloth, but they felt like, with wide shots or anything else, it felt like these things had mass, and they felt like giant things in the middle of, this movie world. In other words, it didn't feel like some weird creation that was either a miniature or something else. When they were breaking apart freeways and a helicopter, whatever, was lifting one up onto an aircraft carrier, whatever, it really felt like an enormous thing. And I thought they did a bunch of stuff to sell the enormity of it. I was impressed
by that. That's a good point. That's a good point. I didn't realize that watching it, but now that you're discussing it, I realize that,
you remember,
that
like,
that's true.
If you'd watch in old movies, like in the old movies, like in the 70s, they couldn't do anything like that. They had to do it all with miniatures. And there was always, you know, the Poseidon Adventure. It's like scary. There's people being battered by water. And then they cut to a shot of obviously a miniature with this wave, and it just instantly, your brain is telling you, well, that's a 1 foot long boat sitting in a tub. And for whatever reason, a lot of the early CGI felt that way too. It just, when they introduced it, they just didn't figure out the techniques to give something size. And this one, they really seemed to figure it out. The little puffs of smoke, the little, I don't know what it was, but it felt very, very substantial. So,
well, I mean, apparently they absolutely maxed out ILM's computing power. They could not have done anything else with the hardware and software they had.
I kept telling you before it came out, I was bothered by the rollerblading ones, and it was such a quick thing that it didn't really bother me that much. It still threw me a little. And I was really going, oh, man, if I watch this thing, and if it's not obvious how they transform from a car into a robot, and they did play a certain amount of that where you know, you could see wheels built in them and stuff, but ultimately it made no sense, but it really didn't bother me one bit. And I thought it really would. I thought I'd have to really clearly see how it transformed. But they didn't. They just did it real quick, and everything turned. It's like, whatever. Didn't really matter to me. I just enjoyed it. I really honestly thought this was kind of fun. And I was not into – I never watched Transformers. It was like 3 years too late for me. So I just missed the whole thing. But I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, right on. anything else new going on with you?
No, I got yelled at by Jeffrey Wells on his website for once again telling him to consider not putting all the Barack Obama, you know, is Jesus, Hillary Clinton is the devil stuff on there. And he told me to cool it or he's going to ban me from his site. So I said, okay, it's your site, I'll stop. But it was like, oh, it's driving me bonkers. Bonkers.
Yeah, I agree. And it's... yeah, it gets old. It's like, you know what? You go to your site for movie stuff, Hollywood stuff. You know, it's fine if you want to throw in some other flavor, but I don't. You know, if I want politics, I go to politics sites. You know.
Well, that said, I did. The thing that ticked him off was this suggestion. I said, you know, you have this new cool website, and at the top you have links like Hollywood Elsewhere, Archives, Oscar Balloon. Create just another page, another link, and call it Washington Elsewhere.
Call it I'm Cranky.
Yeah, or whatever. And just put all that stuff on there and then periodically pull one in there. Well, that really set him off. I guess because I was reasonable and not complaining. But anyway, whatever. It's his site. It's not my site. And it must get old reading idiots like me and about five other people that are continually saying, dude, quit doing this. So it's his site, and who knows? And whatever. I mean, if it's what his passion is, you know, whatever. Plus, apparently his sister died, so it seemed totally wrong to get cranky when his sister has died. That just seemed awful. So, other than that.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of TV going on this week. The last Lost was shown that they had done prior to the writer's strike.
Is that any good? Was it a resolving kind of show, or was it like a midstream?
It was more of a midstream. But I definitely enjoyed it. I think it's been really solid this year.
Yeah.
And it must be really interesting to be an actor and be, especially on a type of show like Lost, where it's primarily an ensemble show. You know, and you can get written out in any second, but the way they shoot it, they do these flashbacks and flash forwards and whatnot, and you know, they can use you as like a hallucination or whatever. So just because you've been shot doesn't mean anything. You could be in the next 10 episodes in a row, and I'm curious how the contracts are set up. Like Harold Perrineau, who you know, Michael, basically the black guy.
Yep.
You know,
and black people love to be referred to, you know, the guy on the show, the black guy on the show. They love that.
I bet they do.
Sorry, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. I need that. Yeah, he was in it for the first two seasons, and then his character was sort of written out, and he basically took all of last year off, and he just now is being written back in, or the character is being written back in. But yeah, and he's done he did 28 Weeks Later, I know, and he's done other movies, but I wonder how much warning the contract says he will get as an actor between him being needed on the Lost set again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm under contract. I don't know if he's being paid for not showing up or if it's, you know, we'll pay you when we write you back in and we can do that whenever we want and give you a day's notice. Hmm. You know, it obviously can't be like that. You've got to let the actor work and make a living, but at the same time, you're using their characters.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And on a show like that where, you know, that's more of a higher end, you know, it's an ensemble cast, but that was one of the higher level characters. But you also think about like a show like West Wing or something where you've got a recurring character, you know, almost like a speaking extra, but is like, you know, on West Wing, CJ's assistant. I can't remember her name. Her character name. But she's in like every episode. And if you were, you know, you can't just have some random extra be CJ's assistant. You've got to have the same actor or actress.
I know nothing about Hollywood, but my suspicion is that they have a contract that says, and people agree to this ahead of time, saying, we're going to pay you X dollars for your availability, and we will give you this much warning if we don't need you, but we're going to pay you X dollars for your availability, and if we do use you, we pay you X more dollars. So in other words, we're going to pay you $500,000 to be available for these 10 weeks. We may only use you three of those weeks, and if we do use you, we're going to pay you an extra $100,000 an episode or something like that. So in other words, if they want them, they have them. If don't, they don't. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Or maybe they have it mapped out at the beginning of the year and they can be more honest about it. But, you know, I don't know.
I can't imagine
any actor would willingly say, okay, I'm going to sign up for this, but they may cancel me and I'm going to sit around and do nothing. I mean, that kind of waiting you have to pay for, whether it's a full ride or not. You got to pay for some of that.
I'm just thinking it from the terms of it's got to be weird to from either of those situations to sort of to be part of something and you never know when you'll need to be a part of it. And, you know, to what degree you have to put the rest of your career or your job on hold because of this thing. And, you know, it's not like it's a surprise. They sign whatever contract they sign. But from the other, and then, you know, sort of the related perspective of being a character on a show and you're not one of the main characters, but you're kind of a character. And, you know, how much of that, are you satisfied with that? Or are you always trying to be a better character on another show?
Yeah.
And, you know, and what that pays and, you know, can you make a living being the assistant for 5 years on a show?
Yeah. Well, like they'll tell you, working actors will tell you, there's nothing better than getting on a show. It's consistent work. We'll sit there and go, God, it's a terrible show. Why are they doing? Why is he like a third banana on Two and a Half Men or whatever? And they'll go, oh my God. It's like David Spade used to refer to Just Shoot Me. He says, I have a little money tree growing in my backyard. And every week I go out there and I shake it and money comes out. I mean, that's the way he describes it, because so much of show business is just freaking out. Where's my next thing? And you may get a ton of money, but you're just freaking out. And you get these shows, and it's the little money tree that grows in your backyard. Even if it's not much, it just keeps coming in and in and in, and they love it, you know? But anyway. So you want to talk about Apple's potential announcement? Did you hear about that?
I don't know which one.
The one about them, despite them poo-pooing this idea and saying nobody wants to do it this way.
Oh, okay.
them talking about offering, well, a twofold thing. One, offering a subscription service for music through iTunes so you'd have access to all music for about $7.88 a month, they figured out. Or you buying a iPod, and for $100 for the life of that iPod, you've bought the rights to download and use music as much as you want, only for the life of that particular iPod, and if you break it, you're screwed. But if an iPod was $300, you'd pay $400, and you could put whatever music you want on it, whenever you want, that's in the iTunes system. So anyway, and that's funny because they've been so clearly disdainful. This is not the model people want. People don't care about this, and they've been so dismissive of Rhapsody and the Yahoo service, and all of a sudden now they're talking about doing it, you know, for their service.
I've put almost no thought into it. You know, I hear Alex Lindsay's always talking about it on This Week and whatever. And because I've never had the subscription service myself, so I've never had that instant access to whatever I want to listen to whenever I want to. And I'm a little bit of a weird test case because as part of working part-time at the radio station for a number of years, I just got a ton of free music. You know, it'd show up in my inbox. There'd be two or three CDs in there every week. And a lot of times it's stuff you don't care about. It's the full CD off of a single. We're playing the single, we get the full CD. And so, okay. So I end up having a ton of music. And I generally don't have an urge to listen to something and don't have it. Or I'll get that urge like, oh, I want to hear this song in the car. But, of course, I will have completely forgotten about it within 2 minutes and don't care. On occasion, I've downloaded a song from iTunes that, you know, was like that, oh, I need to hear this song. I don't know. I've always felt, you know, I've always wanted to own my media. You know, I own a bunch of DVDs. I'm not a Netflix member. And part of that has to do with when I lived closer to you, you were Netflix for me. pretty much.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it also has to do with a lot of movies I want to see, I just end up buying. There's a few that fall into that hazy category of I want to see it enough to see it, but not enough to buy it. Transformers. I want to see it again. I borrowed it from John. I didn't want to see it bad enough that I was going to own it. And so it's, you know, and The ability to watch something whenever I want. I can pop in Lord of the Rings whenever I want. It's 10 feet away from where I'm sitting right now.
They would say, well, that's the beauty of these things, is theoretically, even a really obscure thing you can do. But I'm totally with you because I'm the same exact way.
For me, I
basically mostly through CDs, a little bit through Napster 9 years ago, but mostly right now it's just through my own personal CDs. I have built up a collection of about 1,200 songs, and I would say if I was a completist and wanted to have every song I liked in the entire world, there's maybe 50 additional songs that I need. So it's not like I have this huge thing. I kind of have my, you know, I have the songs I want to listen to and would be comfortable if those are the only songs I listen to the rest of my life.
Well, the other thing about it is for music and to a lesser degree video on the iPhone or the iPod Touch, unless you can download it directly to the phone or directly to the iPod through wireless or whatever, it's having instant access to subscription isn't as valuable to me if I can't do it right then wherever I am. If I have to go home and fart around with the computer to download the song first, that's not as valuable to me. It's still somewhat valuable,
but it's
much more attractive if it's download on demand.
Well, if the iPhone had a bigger capacity or a hard drive, you know, that's got both a cellular carrier and a Wi-Fi carrier. So in theory, you could do it with an iPhone almost anywhere. And if the iPhone allows you to sign up to those new plans that are $99 a month, all data, all whatever. Well, at that point, it's not costing you any extra. So in theory, with those, it would be you could get any song anytime, anywhere, in theory. Yeah, that said, I'm with you. I could care less.
I don't think that iTunes, I don't think the iPhone lets you do iTunes downloads right now. I'm not positive, but I don't.
No, I'm
think
just saying.
It does.
I'm just saying it could, and I'm saying
no,
that.
I agree with that. I don't know what the current capabilities are or aren't.
Well, but they don't. You know, this system isn't even. Apple hasn't even announced it. It's just a rumor.
No, but if you can buy. I'm saying I'm not sure if right now you can buy a song off of iTunes on your iPhone without having to go through the computer. I don't think you can.
I see what you're saying. Okay, I see what you're saying. Well, that would be the assumption if they were trying to answer people like you're a mine, my issue. That said, I really could care less because every once in a while I'll buy a song. I bought one a couple days ago, and again I didn't even use iTunes because they still have frickin' DRM. I went to Amazon, and believe it or not, I cashed in my 5 Pepsi points for my stupid boxes. I thought, what the hell, since they're here, did it and got a song for buying a case of Pepsi. I got a free song.
I find that whole Amazon versus iTunes thing interesting because, you know, the assumption is that it's the music companies trying to hobble iTunes and saying, we don't want you the 800-pound gorilla, so we're not going to give you the opportunity to give our music away DRM-free. We're going to let Amazon do that.
Well, but iTunes does. You just have to pay 29 cents more per song.
No, but it's the music labels determine which of their songs can do that with. And so it's not like Apple doesn't want to compete with Amazon and offer DRM-free songs. But it's the music labels determine how their content will be released, and they're not letting Apple. You know, EMI is letting Apple do it for what you just mentioned. But the music companies don't want Apple to become completely dominant, and so I think that's why they're only allowing Amazon to do that DRM, and it's working because there've been a couple of songs like that where I've gone to Amazon and done it there instead.
Yeah,
which is really frustrating. But
yeah, I did it. I mean, it honestly was super quick, super easy. The only downside is, you know, I save it into my music directory. Then I have to, when I open up iTunes, I've got to go and find the file because it doesn't automatically know it's there. And then it's there, and then I'm done. But it's just like one extra step. But it was just cheap, quick, super quick download, and it's an MP3. It is not a DRM monster, and I'm happy with the thing, and I'm never going to share it. I could care less. I don't share music at all, and it's not like I am living proof that that's the way it should work. It should, you know, as they should just sell them as MP3s and not worry about it. So,
which is funny because I remember you at the tail end of Napster coming in. I downloaded 5,000.
No, when it was Napster, when Napster was crazy, here's what was happening. We're talking 1999, no, 2000. So we're talking like 8 years ago. And Napster was big, but then you heard about, they're going to shut down,
I know.
I was about to go to Europe.
That's right.
So I was freaking out that by the time I got back from Europe, Napster would be shut down, and I would like have lost my chance.
You went on binges of downloading everything ever want.
That's exactly right. And what was funny is we're talking on dial-up. I was on dial-up, and I would set up these downloads, and I'd scour like the Time Life website where they sold all those collections just to remind myself, Gail Garnett's We'll Sing in the Sunshine, Woolly Bully by Sheb, you know, or whatever. I'd be looking at anything I could possibly ever like trying to download them, and I downloaded a crap load of stuff, although ironically since then, I was trying to estimate, and I'd say 3% of my record collection now, music collection, is Napster stuff. Because invariably there were terrible burns, there was problems with them, and I've basically upgraded with stuff I've bought, or I went and got a bunch of CDs that had a bunch of, you know, classic songs on them, and replaced virtually everything. About 3% of them is stuff that was there, and stuff that you couldn't really find easily anyway in a legal version. So while I admit I went crazy, I mean nuts, I was up all night setting up these downloads. And when you think about it, it would take like an hour to download a 5 megabyte song. And I was did like hundreds of them, an hour a song. It's unbelievable. Something that would take you just 20 seconds now. Yeah, that was it. I was manic. It was like I was like on meth. You know, I was like I was just so afraid I was going to lose it. I remember it was like in April of 2000, and I'm going, damn, I'm leaving like on May 2nd. I've got like 2 weeks. I got to get as much as I can in. I was just going nuts. I was like, I had all this stuff to do for work, and I was letting that stuff slide so I could like download more songs. Totally crazy. It's hard to believe it was that long ago. It was almost a decade ago. Anyway, but suffice to say, I'm not that way now. And even then, the irony was, is I was downloading them, but I never, ever, ever shared them the other way. So I was doing illegal act one way, but I wasn't doing what the RIA is going after people for now, which is sending it out the other way. They don't like people downloading them, but they're really upset about the people uploading them. And those are the people they've all gone after, and I never did that ever. I just felt too dirty to me or something.
Not too much else going. Well, let's see. There was something. Oh, just to go back, I remember after we hung up or stopped recording last week, I, of course, immediately remembered something I wanted to talk about, which was the Trent Reznor thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which was essentially the Trent Reznor, who is Nine Inch Nails.
Was there ever a band, or was it always just Trent, like the guy from Badly Drawn Boy, it's just him? There ever a band?
No, that was never. No, there was never any. I mean, he's had musicians.
There's a touring band, but he is everything.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. He plays everything. I don't know if he's always done it, but he has in the past played every instrument on the studio albums.
Okay, so he's like a Renaissance guy.
Yeah. I got an, because I'm, you know, one of my email addresses is signed up to his fan club. Yep. Or on his newsletter. I don't think if you have to pay to be a member of the fan club, I'm not a paying member.
Yep. That's like me with the Who mailing list and the Tom Petty mailing list. I will not pay the Who $50 a year to get their special access, but I will happily accept their other email. Same with Tom Petty.
Anyway, I got an email the other day, or a couple of weeks ago, saying Trent's been working on a new album or a new series of albums. It's instrumental only. You can go to his website here to check out to learn more. It's like, oh, I didn't know he had a new album already. So I click over, and basically he's recorded four albums called Ghosts 1 through 4 that are all instrumental, and he had it set up very easily explained on the site. We'll give you the first. You can right now click on this, and you get the first album for free. You download it. Yep. It's a zip. It expands. Here's what you get in it. You get these tracks that are DRM-free. You get, like, a PDF of a book, like an art booklet that would be in a CD. Or yep. You can purchase all four albums in a zip file for $5. Or we've got some, you know, you can also get, like, get this music on CD, and that'll be, like, $20. And then they add some special edition. Like, get the vinyl, get some stuff signed for, I don't know, $300. And I thought, wow, that's cool. Free music. Yes, please. So I clicked on the link, and it was a piece of cake. I downloaded the zip. I expanded it. I dragged the songs into iTunes. I listened to them at work the next day. And I thought it was fine. It wasn't spectacular music, although I almost never think something is spectacular the first time I hear it. I have to hear it a few times for it to sink in.
Yep.
And I thought, this is pretty cool. And then I heard them bring it up on This Week in Media, talking about within the space of a week, he'd made $750,000. Just him, not his label, just him doing this off of these three different options of paying plus the freebie. And then within 2 weeks, he'd made like $1.7 million or $1.something million. And there's no... like there's no DRM on them. He released them under a Creative Commons license, so you could actually, if you were doing a fundraising video, you could put this, you could put legally this music on your fundraising video.
Trying to think about how his kind of music would support developmentally disabled people.
It's not all hard edged.
Oh, really?
Stuff.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's the only limitation is you can't make a commercial with it. You can't make a profit off it. But it's very enlightened thinking. It's like this is exact. I mean, he's so tuned in with what's appropriate right now. I mean, similar to, you know, Radiohead and their download it and pay whatever you want experiment. That was really prescient, saying, you know what, this is how people want to get the music, we think. Here's an opportunity.
But again, it's Radiohead and Trent Reznor were known hip commodities. I'm trying to figure out somebody with their talent just starting out now.
Well, that's
how they
could
get into
question.
That position. But that said, I was blown away by something my niece said the other day. My niece is 15, and I took her and her friends to a concert this week or last week. Serge Tankian, who's the lead singer of System of a Down, and he's like doing his own solo thing right now. And so I was talking to her, and at one point I was asking her about what radio station she listened to, and she goes, I don't listen to radio. And I started rattling off all the names of the local radio stations. She didn't know a single one of them. She literally never, ever listens to radio. And you know what? Music is as big of a part of her life as it was my life at that age. In fact, I would say more. And I asked her, well, how do you listen to bands? How do you find them out? And she said, pretty much almost totally through MySpace.
Yeah,
she has friends that recommend, they get in these things, they go to bands' websites, they listen, if they like it, they download it from iTunes. She doesn't do anything illegal. It doesn't even occur to her because her parents like refill her iTunes account like $20 a month or something, and she'll download some stuff. Totally this way of listening and finding out music that I'm completely unaware of. Totally. So I look at that and go, yeah, somebody, the next Trent Reznor is already there, and they're setting up a MySpace page and going to make a crap load of money. And I'm pretty much unaware of that. The only time I ever hear music on iTunes, and I never go to MySpace, but I'll go to somebody's page, and instantly some song starts kicking in without asking my permission, and I'll like surf off the page immediately or try to figure out how to turn the damn thing off. That's my extent of it, but that's what she does.
Well,
we're definitely living in a different time.
Well, and people, I mean, that's been coming down the pike for a while. I remember being at a staff meeting for the radio station, and one of the higher-ups pointed out, they said, you know what, and this is probably four or five years ago, maybe, and she said, my daughter doesn't listen to the radio anymore. She said she's got an iPod, she's got stuff over the internet, and this is still, you know, 4 or 5 years ago is before MySpace got big. I don't even know if they were around at all. But she said she's not coming back. She is not going to get back into radio.
Yep.
And she knew then that there was going to be you need to do new ways of thinking because the industry
yep.
as it exists is unsustainable.
Yep.
And so that, you know, that worry has been around for a while, and how. And it seems like the music industry, at least the higher and bureaucratic end, is not adapting well at all. It's people like Trent or
they're scrambling, and then they're trying to desperately protect whatever little they have, both radio and music, without realizing their ship is so totally passed. They're going to have to figure out a different way, or just go out of business. And the really big players are the ones that are saying, the record, quote, record industry is now a small part of it. We're going to pay Madonna millions of dollars, but we're paying her as a performer, and we're going to make money on a little bit on the records, but the records are a mild vehicle that pales in comparison as Madonna as a performer, as a concert draw, as stuff like that.
And the
record companies that are still putting stuff out, it's just unbelievable. There was this gal on American Idol. I don't know where she's at right now, but I didn't realize you were allowed to do this, but this gal, I think she's from Ireland or something, and she was like 5 years ago signed to do this big major label debut. They pumped like $2 million into recording this record, got all of these famous producers to do this thing and publicized her, and the record sold like 300 copies.
Wow.
They spent like $2 million on this thing, and then they dropped her. And now she's on American Idol. So she's like trying to get back into the music. But, you know, that's like you just will never hear stories like that again. Record companies, I don't think, have the money to do that. All they can do now is sort of ride on the waves of some other way of
producing. Well, no, I think they do have the money, but it's less and less because they're still making money from back catalog sales. But they're just not able to crank, you know, You know, for a while they had the let's manufacture a star, let's manufacture somebody like Britney or, you know, the boy bands or whatever. I think there's less of an ability to do that now. But they're, you know, they're still signing bands. But there's so much risk involved in that, which I've seen just as through the radio or for listening to This Week in Media about, you know, you sign a contract with a label, you know, you put all this effort into your first album, which, you know, it's usually the songs as an artist that you've been concentrating on the most. And then the label goes through a reorg. The people who were backing you and were your fans aren't there anymore. The new people have no idea who you are. If they don't hear an instant easy single, you know, they might say, okay, thank you for your album, and that's it. They put it in a drawer. They never release it. You don't have any rights to do anything with it other than maybe play the music at live shows.
And what is a single anymore? You know, because nowadays they're all thinking, well, is this a single? Is this something I can sell to Levi's or Sprite as, you know, for their record? They had the article in the New York Times about the South by Southwest festival last week, and every single band there, and they have like 1,000 bands playing there, and everyone was relentlessly highlighting their songs, and they all sounded exactly the same, which is short, quick hooks that could be used in jingles.
That's funny.
All they were doing. Then they're not the worst things in the world. It's just that they realize that they're not going to get pulled out of there, and then some label's going to nurture them for a year while they develop their first album. They're going to get an existing song pulled out to be used in a jingle, and then that will be the launching board for their career. You know, it's funny you mentioned the back catalog, because that's the great hidden lie of the music industry. They pointedly, was it 10 years ago, took classic albums that had been out for more than like 2 years, took them off the top 100 list because they were skewing things. And one thing they don't mention, like if you were to actually look at the top 10 albums of last year, you know, last year was an abysmal year. I think the top record was some horrible Christmas album.
Uh-huh.
But in years past, the top record might sell like 7 million copies, 6 million copies. The top selling record last year sold like 2 million records.
Right.
Well, you know what really would have been in the top 5 of records last year?
Dark Side of the Moon.
A little album. No. AC/DC Back in Black sold almost 2 million records last year. It would have been like the number 3 selling album of 2007. I mean, that is crazy. They won't mention that. They won't let you know that it's selling those records. But the only thing that is keeping the music industry afloat is music that was recorded a generation ago. And the fact is we're getting older. I mean, I'm turning 40 next week, and I'll keep listening to AC/DC Back in Black, but not people younger than me will be doing that, and that's just going to disappear.
I don't know a bigger AC/DC fan than Richard Huffman.
You know, I'm a huge fan, and I will listen to him. But no, there's plenty of people that are much bigger than me.
I just said that I know. There was a throwaway joke in a My Name Is Earl that I saw. I don't remember when, and the joke was that he abandoned his kids to go to an AC/DC show, and they're sitting at home miserable because their dad isn't there, and he comes home with the concert shirt on. You know, screaming,
right,
doing devil horns, saying, they opened with Money Talks. It was awesome. And I tell that joke to Richard, and Richard's like, they never opened with Money Talks.
No. First of all, they would never do it because that's a big closer thing. That's before the encore, but it's the closer because they have to throw the little Angus Bucks out there. If they're going to open, it's going to be with, from the same album. It's going to be Thunderstruck because they have their set.
I was trying to think, I was thinking that was your reaction.
I was thinking, I like Back in Black, but it's far from my favorite AC/DC stuff. But I was thinking, you know, how many versions of that album I've owned. My brother gave me a copy of it when it came out on 8-track tape, so that's one. I bought a record of it a year later, that's two. I know I bought another record of it after that, because that was three. My friend, sort of friend, stole one of my records of it, amongst other things, which was a kind of a deal breaker for our friendship, so I had to get another one, so that was four. I know I bought a cassette of it, at least one, but I'm going to say two. So that's six. I know I bought a CD of it early on, horribly mastered CD. So that's seven. I also know that I bought a better one when a better remastered came out, so that's eight. I also know that I bought the Bonfire disc set, and the Bonfire disc set was a great set which featured Bon Scott music and stuff, and they put a copy in there, so that's nine. And about a year ago, they put out another version on the flip side. It had a DVD where they talked about the making of it. So I've purchased AC/DC Back in Black 10 times. And I know that, and I know I'm not alone. It's, you can't keep buying them. The thing is, though, now, there's no real compelling reason to purchase it again, unless it's part of some weird package I get. And that's what they're relying on. That, you know, AC/DC Back in Black is like I think it's the second, internationally, it's the second or possibly third biggest selling album of all time, after Thriller, and then possibly after the Eagles. And it sold like 25 million copies. But I realize, you know, a lot of that is us buying the same damn thing over and over again, and that will, there's no better format, you know? The high-end SACD and DVD audio, those just did not pan out. So it's coming to an end. I have no particular reason to buy another copy of it. I just think that the music industry is based around making money off of this stuff, and it will end. It will just end. It will start to seem like when we were a kid and they had all those beautiful music stations. You remember the ones that played, you know, music from the 40s and 50s, like easy listening stuff, that seems so anachronistic? Well, that's what AC/DC and the Rolling Stones are going to become.
Yeah.
That's my polemic. It's sad, but that's what's going to happen, and quietly we will die off. I'm 40 now, and I'll be 65 in 25 years, and that will be and when I get put in the old age home, they'll be playing AC/DC.
That's impressive. I mean,
we laugh at that.
A liberal studies major.
Yep. Well, I mean, it sounds funny to think, you know, you go to the old age homes and they'll be playing that, but that's exactly what they do. I run an organization, and part of the people that we have in our organization, some are older people with, you know, cognitive failings, basically. They're getting Alzheimer's and stuff. And we play karaoke, and you play the music that they remember when they were younger, like Tennessee Ernie Ford, you load 16 tons and stuff like that. They remember that. You see their eyes light up. Well, I'm going to be sitting here with my head shaking and drool coming out of the mouth, and on the karaoke machine is going to come Shoot to Thrill, and I'll be singing it. And it's sad, but that's what's happening. Time marches on, and the record industry is totally attached to their old money, and it's going to disappear.
There was a couple of weeks ago, the Rock Band song downloadable content for that week was Nine Inch Nails, including March of the Pigs and The Perfect Drug, and then another newer song, I don't know. And so I'm like, I would definitely say Vocalist is not usually my thing. It's not my forte. But I thought, okay, I'll do Nine Inch Nails song, because if nothing else, I know the lyrics, and I can really, you know, the songs, whether it's Guitar Hero or Rock Band, the songs are a lot easier when you know the songs. Yeah. And if you like the song, it's certainly a lot more fun. You know, so I get the mic and I'm singing. It was just surprising how, because depending on the level of difficulty you set, you have to nail the pitch to a greater degree of accuracy. And I have horrible pitch control. So I know these songs. I figure I'm really, you know, I feel like I'm nailing it. But it's, you know, the game says, no, you're about to fail. You're like, no, but it's Nine Inch Nails. I know the song. I know March of the Pigs. Yeah. I'm singing it. Can't you hear me singing it? Its timing is perfect. But because my pitch is off, it's like, no, you're failing. And it was just, it was really frustrating, because I don't care if I fail some horrible song that I don't know, but I like this song. I should be good at it.
I'm gonna suspect if and when they finally do release AC/DC to them, it'll be very easy, because Brian Johnson has one pitch. You know, it's that same goddamn thing all the time. And so it's going to be easy at least to play the singing parts. But I don't know. I'm thinking about actually going out, now that I have just a tad of money, going out and getting like a used video game tonight to tide me over until Grand Theft Auto 3 comes out. I'm thinking about if I can find, or four, if I can find, there's a couple I'm thinking about getting. Rainbow Six, because, Rainbow Six Vegas 1, because 2's just out, so 1's gotta be like $30 now. Maybe if the Star Wars is cheap, the full Star Wars set. And other than that, it's amazing how used video games are not a bigger commodity, because even when you go on Amazon, they're like $5 cheaper if it's still a current game. You'd think tons of people would be just tired of them. Sure, I'll give it up. And you think you could sell them for a lot more. But you look online and you'll see Assassin's Creed, it's like $55 used. And you just, you know, you'd just be surprised, because when you go to a store, they're only going to buy it for like $20. Mm-hmm. So you just think that there'd be more people out there making bigger, or, you know, there'd be steeper discounts. So I'll get the 6-month-old games. And I did Microsoft product testing this week, and I haven't gotten it yet, but I'm trying to struggle with what the hell I want to get with my little, I can get whatever freebie, because really the software, I have so many acquaintances that work at Microsoft that I don't really want to waste it on some super piece of software. So I'll figure I'll go games, and there really isn't much out there that either don't have or I'm not interested in or am interested in. I think I'm going to get the Project Gotham Racing 4 because I really like the 3. Other than that, there's not much left. It's kind of, I love doing that Microsoft usability testing, but I absolutely am running out of stuff that I want from Microsoft.
That's funny.
Although it's funny, they have this series of products that I'm really intrigued by, this Microsoft Expression, I think. And it's a series of tools that essentially, among many things, sort of replicates a lot of Adobe stuff. The Silverlight thing, which is unquestionably a great product. And it's essentially similar to Flash on Adobe. And then they have like a what's clearly a replacement to Front Page and some other stuff. And I thought, damn, I might as well get that stuff just to try it out. But I'm not really sure. But the funny thing was, I went to the Microsoft website, and it's so full of jargon that it took me 15 minutes to figure out what the hell these products were. You know, they called one like Expression Blend and Expression something else. I couldn't figure out a damn thing about it. Then I watched the video, and I was like, okay, now I get it. But sometimes you go to websites and you wonder, and Microsoft is far from the only one. Like some of these other websites, they get so caught up in calling things solutions and recipes that you want to strangle them. You go, nobody in their right mind call something a solution. You know, let's look for a web solution. No, I want a product. Don't call it a solution. I hate that. Anyway, I digress.
That's okay.
So I'm thinking I'm getting the Project Gotham Racing. It looks good, and I've heard good things
about
it.
That's cool. There's some additional free Halo multiplayer maps on Tuesday. I'll get those. It'll be cool. Anyway, I've been meaning to get back into Halo, but it's... I
should get back in. I'd be willing to bet that, I would be violating a non-disclosure agreement. But suffice it to say, they probably won't be a surprise to your friend Richard Huffman.
No, the ones that are free this week are the ones that you can pay for right now. And then they're releasing...
Oh, what are the maps?
And then they're releasing the new map that you can pay for, I don't know if that's this week or just quote-unquote soon. So that's the way they do it.
What are the... Oh, so they're probably already out there, so I'm not delighted. I don't know. I played a couple different maps. They were a blast. They were a lot of fun.
So I'm looking for...
So I can't remember the names.
I just need to get that back into my schedule. I was working on this website for a friend forever, and I still need to work on it, but I'm waiting for them to get back to me with some stuff now. And
how's it looking?
Oh, it's fine. It's up now and working, although there's a script error on the homepage that IE is tripping over that I can't figure out. But between working on that and just work, I've had very little actual video game time. So
when I'm watching my movies, there it's always clicking on and off. Jay Herg whatever is online, so I know when you're at least logging on. It tells me when you're logging on. What does your user or your name mean anyway?
I guess I'll discuss what it is. So.
Oh, sorry. Is it a bad thing?
I'm just not wild about my gamer tag. Well, no, wait. My gamer tag's on the homepage of this site. That's right.
Yeah. Well, it can't be as bad as mine.
No, it's just having weirdos ping you. It's Jereg. It's a It's from a series of books by a guy named Stephen Brust. And it's I'm not really into fantasy, but I really enjoyed his writing style, and it's funny. And Jareg is a... It's a class of animal. It's basically a little flying dragon lizard thing.
Oh. So it's obscure and geeky at the same time.
Well, isn't everything?
I just mess with you. I found that website the other day where it talks about how you come up with your porn name, which is
the name of your favorite
animal in the street. So what would your porn name, if you can remember the street you were living on when you were a child, and your beloved pet, most recent beloved pet?
I'm not going to say either of those things.
You refuse to? Well, for me, it would have been... it's either going to be... Because I can't do a girl, obviously. So it's either going to be... I'll just say it. It'd be Spud Rathburn. Does that sound like a porn name?
Actually, it kind of does.
Or it could be Gilligan Rathburn, but I prefer Spud Rathburn.
That's funny.
Certainly not Ruby Rathburn.
All right.
Or it could be, if you go with Germany, it could have been Spud Argentina Chalet.
Actually, it's funny, because when it...
The
first time you choose your gamer tag, you have this idea of, I want to try this. Oh, it's taken. What about this? Oh, it's taken. So, you know, it's like choosing an email address. You get down to like your eighth or ninth choice, and by then you're just so burnt out on the process, you're throwing random numbers in there.
I know, and then you're stuck with the damn thing. The worst was an AOL would always suggest a new one. Richard is unavailable. How is Richard 73-17-33L? And it's like, is that the best suggestion they could come up with? It's kind of depressing, you know?
Yeah, so it sounds like we're about done.
Yep.
We'll have, this is what?
Last week I got it up in record time.
You're the man.
Within an hour. I was the man.
You're the man. All right. You guys rock at mustardamonaise.com. In theory, goes to one of us or both of us.
Yep.
And I am Matt.
And I'm Richard.
And you both, thank you for listening.